Welcome everyone to the Compass live stream. We have two amazing guests today for this afternoon's live stream, talking about something a little bit different, not ASIC markets or hosting facilities, but talking about the public mining market. We've covered this a little bit in prior streams, but it's been a bit. We're excited to return to this sphere of the industry. Before we get the guests to introduce themselves and jump into some conversation, as always, shout out to my co-host, Will. Will, thanks for being here. Excited for this conversation.
Totally, Zach. Thanks for setting us up. Public markets are not something I think a lot of us think about when we think about Bitcoin mining. I think we're basically just considering the machines or hashing or how to like stack more sats and through mining. But public markets are obviously something that really more miners should consider going forward and the dynamics they play with the industry itself. So excited to have these two guests kind of speak to that side of the whole market.
Yeah, for sure. And definitely lots of money flowing around in public mining spheres right now, which sort of adds importance to it as well. But David and Wes, thank you both for coming on the stream. Huge honor to have you both here. Huge respect for both of the things you guys are building and just your experience in the space as well. If you don't mind giving our audience just a brief introduction to yourselves, what you're building, and sort of how your journey gets through the Bitcoin and mining space to where you are now, just by way of introduction. Wes, I'll pass it to you first and then David also.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys. I came to this business, I guess, through sort of traditional financial markets, started in asset management, and then spent about a dozen years as an investment banker up here in Toronto. And in 2016, sat through my first CFA lunch on sort of a teaser to Bitcoin and sort of became an advocate and enthusiast ever since. Hung up my banking hat in 18 to lead what was first a private company and then eventually a public company in two separate markets now. Traded on the NASDAQ and the TSXV, which is Bitfarms as CEO. Sort of scaled that business to about almost an exahash by the time I left. And earlier this year, joined a couple of partners and launched a registered investment advisor in the US called Verity Funds. Started trading our first ETF on the NYSE in July, which is the Verity Cleaner Energy and Semiconductor ETF. So I've been trading for about 3 months. It's an actively managed product, really investing in the infrastructure that underpins this network, process of clearing and validating trades. And in addition to the semiconductor companies producing the chips that go into this mining hardware. So pleased to be here.
Awesome. David, pass it to you also. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're working on, how you came to Bitwise, and the products that Bitwise has with regard to mining?
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me, Will and Zach. Wes, great meeting you. So I'm David. I'm the Director of Research at Bitwise. We are an asset manager focused on crypto. We manage over $1.5 billion in assets today. And our primary audience is what we call professional investors, mostly financial advisors. But more recently, we've been expanding to other types of professional investors as well, such as like hedge funds and institutions. I also share a traditional finance background like Wes. I used to work as a sell-side equity research analyst. So I used to be one of those guys who used to analyze stocks and write reports, like buy the stock, sell the stock. I worked on a bunch of IPOs and other types of equity offerings as well. I used to cover Latin American stocks. I'm originally from Brazil, born and raised there. I got into Bitcoin because I was interested in things like cost and economics and some money and those sort of things quite before learning about Bitcoin. So that's how it kind of slowly grew on me. And then I decided to make the shift. That's how I moved to the U.S. And I worked at another crypto asset manager called Hashdex, which is based in Brazil, based in Latin America. And I joined Bitwise in early 2020. So at Bitwise, we have a bunch of funds that have exposure to the crypto asset space. We have a pretty strong indexing/ETF background, especially among our leadership. And maybe more relevant to this question, maybe more relevant to this chat, is that we have an index that tracks the crypto equities market. So these are stocks that have some sort of exposure to the crypto market.
Awesome. Yeah, no, that's beautiful. I think both of these products, although to different degrees, offer tools, I guess, to get exposure to, like you mentioned, David, in some cases, the public crypto market in general, but also mining more specifically in many cases. And obviously with the RIGS fund, mining almost exclusively. I kind of want to set the tone for the conversation with by kicking off with like an open-ended question. Just from your two perspectives, managing these different products and looking at, I mean, compared to even just a year ago, like all of the different listings we've seen on, I guess, primarily the NASDAQ for public mining companies specifically and on other exchanges for crypto more generally. What's your sort of pulse or temperature reading for public crypto and mining markets? Is it healthy? Is it super frothy? Are things like just gearing up or sort of in the later stage of, you know, this current bullish cycle or anything anywhere in between? Curious to know your thoughts. David, I'll hand it back to you. And then Wes also definitely want to know your opinion and outlook.
Yeah, sure. No, we're very excited. Maybe if I can, I'll just start with the crypto market in general, because I think they share a lot of dynamics with the mining market more specifically. But we actually even wrote a white paper a month or two ago on these dynamics. And we do see investors interested in crypto equities, basically for two reasons. One of them is because they want to have exposure to crypto, indirect exposure to crypto. That's probably less the case right now that we're starting to see Bitcoin ETFs, kind of imperfect ETFs, but still exposure to Bitcoin ETFs being approved. But we were seeing investors who want to have exposure to these stocks because they're an indirect way to have exposure to Bitcoin or crypto, which is kind of true. I mean, if you look at correlations and these kind of things, correlations are pretty high with crypto in general. But I feel like the reason why I think this market is especially interesting, and I think the miners are a very special case here, is that crypto equities is a very interesting industry in and of itself. I mean, this is one of the industries that has been growing the fastest this year. We made an analysis considering that if crypto were a sector within the S&P 500, which is the broad large cap market index here for the US, there's no crypto company there, nor even Coinbase is part of that index. But if crypto were part of that index, 9 of the 10 largest growth companies would be crypto companies. And the other company is Moderna. So like this is an industry that grows exceptionally fast, especially for public market type of investors. But what makes it really interesting is that it's also a very profitable industry. Usually when you think about tech companies that grow very fast, you think about companies that lose money. You don't think about companies that are highly profitable. And crypto is kind of those both things. And mining is kind of that on steroids, right? Because I feel like mining provides not only indirect exposure to the Bitcoin price, but also leverage in that, as you can know, you guys know way better than I do, these companies are able to mine a Bitcoin for a fraction of maybe 25% of the current price of a Bitcoin. So not only you have that, but you also have this leverage component. So I'm very excited about this industry. I mean, there's a bunch of dynamics I'm sure we're going to touch on, but overall, I'm super positive on it.
Yeah, I'm not really sure where to start with this question. It's a pretty big one. I think at Bitfarms, we were probably the fourth in terms of lineup publicly listed global equity in the sector. Historically, people have used the miners as a proxy for underlying exposure to BTC, and certainly with the evolution of the Bitcoin ETF in Canada in February with Purpose and Evolve being first out of the gate. And now in the US with these futures projects or futures ETFs, I think there is obviously other ways to play it, and in the emergence of coin shares and others. Largely speaking, the vast majority of miners in the public markets have gone through the back door in terms of a listing via an RTO, like the takeover, reverse takeover of an already reporting and issuer that meets all the regulatory standards of the exchange that they're listing on. I think now we're starting to see sort of more organic, like IPO based or uplistings that are going through the front door with some of the regulators, and which is a blessing on its own. It's what we did with Bitfarms through the OSC in July of 2019. And that proxy for BTC through the miners is that, you know, digital asset exposure on their balance sheets, the underlying torque to the commodity, and then ultimately the impressive sort of industrial operating business that certainly in its current day, where you're able to produce BTC if you're running like low cost power and best gen hardware at like 90% gross mining margins, like revenue or BTC rewards, less power spend. So it's an attractive business, and with that comes an attractive multiple. Right now, I think that the markets with certain names are somewhat frothy. There's like, we're starting to see the miners and research analysts revisiting historical multiples like enterprise value to megawatt, which makes absolutely no sense when you're talking about like the value of a megawatt, the varying infrastructure build-out costs, the varying power, the varying types of equipment being used. Where, you know, I think what we'd love to see in the public markets anyways is this transitioning to more like a fundamental valuation, where you're actually doing this on real term cash flow, like multiples of EBITDA, multiples of revenue, multiples of earnings. And I think it will evolve certainly as the sector diversifies, as there's more entrants. But you know, it's definitely exciting times. There's sort of limitless access to capital, it seems like, out there. That being said, you go back to March, I think it was March of 2021, where you saw Coinbase begin its trading debut. I think people cycling out of some of the miners over those first few trading sessions into names like Coinbase at an insane valuation that didn't hold, certainly the pre-marketing valuation. It's sort of demonstrative of the fact that the sector, there isn't massive capital, endless capital behind some of these public equities. And when there are new names that emerge, you can see the capital flows out of you know, names that may have been in favor last week into the new sort of latest trend. And ultimately, you know, as this sector sort of evolves and hits an equilibrium where mining economics normalize, we all know that they're likely not going to sit at 40 cents rev per terahash for the long term. Opportunistic entrepreneurs and businesses will respond to market conditions by growing their ops, and that will increase hash rate, and that will sort of reduce your share of the overall network compute and impact your revenues and your profitability. So, but the one thing that is prevalent and certainly applicable to our active strategy with RIGS is that I think there are a lot of, even to this day, four and a half years after the emergence of the first publicly listed company in the global markets, being Hive up here in Canada, there are some very, I think, evident mispricings in the market that we're focused on exploiting through an active strategy, underweighting what we believe to be dogs or overvalued companies, and overweighting those that should be stellar performers going forward.
Totally. I love all that background. And I actually want to take an even further step back and kind of talk about ETFs, SPACs, and index funds in general, just to try to understand why these mining vehicles exist and why mining is becoming more and more financialized. So if we can just take another step back and explain, maybe Wes, we'll start off with you. Why would a mining corporation want to put itself into this position where it can go public? And what are some benefits from going public?
I've been asked this question many, many, many times as a former banker over the dozen years I was sitting in a banking chair. And the fact is, like, I would never recommend a business enter the public markets if they don't have to. Ultimately, it's about just given the governance, the continuous disclosure, opening your shareholder registry up to a bunch of new names, new owners that you have no idea who they are, where they sit, and how much effort is going to be required to effectively babysit them, respond to inquiries, and just make sure that they're sort of well informed of the vision of the company, what's transpired to date and current, and what's going forward. So I think you know, just really the justification for going to the public markets is liquidity. If you've got early stage shareholders that are looking to monetize a position or sort of reduce their exposure to your business, and certainly a lot of private market financings have liquidity provisions in early round investments and term sheets that require companies to pursue listings and liquidity events within certain timeframes. And the other, I think, single biggest motivating factor, especially in today's day and age and throughout 2021 and throughout 2017 and a little bit in sort of the first half of 2019, is capital, access to capital, right? You've got what seems to be endless access to capital. You saw a ton of financing, certainly in the first and second half. You've seen some SPACs, which is really just like a blind pool of like hundreds of millions of bucks on a balance sheet looking for a qualifying acquisition, all pursuing mining RTOs or mining listings right now, mining transactions, M&A. So you've just got capital, which when you're out looking to outpace network growth and maintain your market share, increase your market share, especially when there are big ticket items, i.e. hardware required to scale an operation, you need to be shoring up your balance sheet on a regular basis to continue to expand, to continue to grow your profitability or cash flows.
Totally. And David, really quick, I want to give it to you just to understand an index fund for these mining markets. Like, why would I want to get a weighted basket of goods that operates as a stock or something like that?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I think, I mean, today in the market, there's of course many different strategies. And I think some strategies make sense for some investors, other different strategies make sense for other investors. What we at Bitwise, as of right now, we're pretty focused on indexing. So our index for the crypto equities market is basically an index that is market cap weighted. And it has a few caps and a methodology that I'm happy to discuss. But the idea here is to represent the market. So like by having exposure to an index like our crypto equities index, we don't make bets like the one Wes does, and which are very interesting and can generate a lot of alpha and a lot of interesting returns to investors. But our philosophy is a little bit different in that we don't say I'm going to buy this miner or I'm going to sell this miner because I like this one less or like this one more. We have an index methodology that we follow. So you can think of it as like an example in the traditional market would be the S&P 500, which is like a broad market cap U.S. exposure, or XLF, which is exposure to the financial sector, right? So that's basically what we do for the crypto market. One interesting thing I believe about miners is that right now miners is the biggest segment in our index. And it's about a third of the whole index weight. We have seven miners that are part of our index, including Bitfarms. And I think it makes sense for a lot of miners to come to the market exactly for the reason that Wes mentioned, which is access to capital. This is a capital intensive business. This might very well be the most capital intensive business in crypto. So I think having this direct access to capital is something that could be a competitive advantage for many of these companies.
That's a perfect segue, David, into something I want to talk about next. And I'm actually going to hand it right back to you because there, like you mentioned, I think it would be interesting to sort of explore a little bit of the different strategies slash methodologies for the Verity product and the Bitwise Index products. Could you, before we get to Wes, David, could you just explain a little bit more, maybe the methodology that is steering the index towards such a heavy mining exposure right now, and just the methodology behind your index in general?
Yeah, totally. More than happy to. So the way our index works is that it has basically two sleeves. The first sleeve is what we call the tier one companies. And these are companies that we screen as company that we call having pure exposure to crypto. This is 85% of the index. And these are, we have some criteria for a company to be called pure play, but it's usually having things like 75% plus of its revenue coming from crypto activities. I mean, of course, the miners would all fall into that category, but you can also think of companies like Coinbase, MicroStrategy. So you also have a threshold of Bitcoin holdings or crypto holdings after which a company can qualify. So this is the tier one part of our index. There are 20 companies in that sleeve. And we have another sleeve that we call ancillary or supporting exposure. That's 15% of the index. We have 10 companies here. So here you can think of companies like maybe Square or maybe PayPal. These are companies that are involved in crypto, but that don't necessarily derive most of their economic activity out of crypto. We reconstitute our index every 3 months, which is kind of normal for equity indices. So every 3 months, we roll the whole methodology again under these parameters I've said. We have a few caps. So tier one companies, they usually tend to stay at around 10% most of the index. Tier two companies, they tend to stay at around 4% or actually even less for the index. But that's how basically it works. And other than that, it's basically a market cap weighted index. So throughout the quarter, basically it's whatever the market movement takes these companies.
That's very, very interesting. I actually didn't know there were those two different sleeves, but thanks for that explanation. Wes, I want to hand it over to you also, obviously, as sort of a mining exclusive product. I think we can throw up on the screen really quick, just a quick snapshot of your current allocations. I don't want to ask you to, you know, leak all of your alpha here, but I'm curious to know, like, your strategy behind your current allocations, and just your strategy in general for the RIX fund, if you can explain that for us at kind of a high level.
Yeah, like, look, I think in the ETF world, an index-based product is sort of commonplace. You know, so we have a background and a history through myself and partners in the mining sector, like with hands-on sort of build and operational experience married with financial markets. So that we chose an active strategy just given the fact that there are some evident mispricings. And part of the blessing and the curse of running an actively managed product is that there are various sort of SEC portfolio diversification guidelines we have to adhere to. So there's a 25% rule where none of your positions can be greater than 25% of total AUM. There's a 50% treasury rule where the sum of all of your 5% plus positions can't be greater than 50%. And then there's just an overall sort of like market cap liquidity thresholds for every name you own. And when we launched this product on July 20th, you know, the sample set of potential investments and holdings within the fund just wasn't as great as certainly we would desire or appreciate long term. The sector has been evolving with you know, Greenidge and Mawson and these sort of new public listings that have debuted since launch, and certainly those on the come. And the portfolio will, I think, go more pure play crypto mining, less semiconductor allocations as you're seeing in the fund today, which is about 20% of our AUM. Just because that's what the product was intended to be. And then, you know, another caveat being the fact that when you look at these names, you know, Marathon a year ago is a fraction of what it is today and what it will be in 12 months time. The same could be said for Hut 8, for Bitfarms, for Greenidge, for everybody you're seeing in the sector. It's a new sector. It's a nascent marketplace. We can't penalize operations for what they're running today. We're really trying to do this on a forward-looking basis, 12 months out, looking at equipment orders, operational expansions, and trying to forecast out mining economics at a point in time 12 months from now to look at valuation multiples to select our sort of top holdings. In addition to that, we layer on an energy screening to the names that we focus on. So 80% of the funds allocated to the crypto mining pure play companies that meet those revenue tests for associated revenue generated from mining have to be allocated towards green energy based operations that pass an internal sort of scoring matrix that we've designed. But again, caveat being it's not today, it's 12 months from now, just given how fast some of these companies are evolving. We have to do this on a forward-looking basis because you don't want to penalize a group inappropriately if they're a new entrant and they've got a big balance sheet, they've got equipment secured, and they're going to be a much bigger sort of force going forward.
For sure. That makes a lot of sense and a lot to unpack there. I don't know if we have time for all of that, but I appreciate that overview from both of you. I kind of want to touch on something we mentioned a little bit ago earlier in the conversation, though, that being these mining equities for a select subset of investors serving as just sort of indirect exposure to Bitcoin. Where I'm going with this question is obviously we've seen a futures Bitcoin ETF approved and trading now. And I'm curious how you guys sort of think of, I guess, maybe the maturation of the market or just the maturation of the broad set of crypto / mining / other Bitcoin investors in general, whether like a Bitcoin ETF, futures ETF, and then fingers crossed for maybe a spot ETF in the future, competes, I guess, indirectly with your products, or if, you know, they're apples and oranges and they all have their different subsets of investors and sort of their spot in the portfolio and they don't really compete. Just your thoughts, I guess, in general on the state of crypto ETFs now that we have a Bitcoin futures ETF and, you know, whether or not there is sort of any direct or indirect competition with your products. Wes, I'll hand it back to you. And then David, definitely curious to hear your thoughts also.
Yeah, so certainly a product I'm familiar with being up here in Canada in February, we saw, I think it was Purpose First. Again, I haven't discussed this narrative for quite some time, but Purpose First and Evolve a day later, and Purpose, you know, 3 weeks out was sitting on almost $1 billion in AUM, and Evolve had like 30 million in AUM. So there's that significant first mover advantage in a spot ETF, our digital asset ETF. We saw the ProShares and then Valkyrie futures ETFs launch last week. Certainly interesting to see the volume, the price performance would sort of trend as you would expect it to as a highly correlated product to BTC price movements. I think the futures ETF product, I mean, there's pros and cons. One, it's an evolving, I don't want to say sort of financialization, but it's just another option for those desiring to get exposure to digital assets within a sort of registered vehicle in their Morgan Stanley or JP Morgan like investment account, buying it through their retail advisor, it's just another option to play the asset class, which is a benefit. But again, this is a financially settled bet on a certain direction and price movements, a financial derivative on top of the spot commodity, which doesn't necessarily result in any more sort of long-term buying of the underlying commodity, which would be very different than a spot ETF, right? So pros and cons. I think one of the interesting developments you're seeing is the Grayscale sort of commentary and press release last week where they're talking about converting a closed-end fund to an ETF, which to me as an asset manager desiring to accumulate AUM and ultimately build a fee stream for the investment manager seems kind of unfathomable. You've got, you know, a product that's managing almost 650,000 BTC at a 2% fee where people cannot redeem with the issuer. That's an infinite fee stream. And if BTC goes to 500K, $1 million a coin, that is a very, 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 very valuable business. But ultimately, they've got shareholders and significant owners of GBTC to deal with that are basically, you know, twisting their arms, demanding that they convert so they have more liquidity options just outside of, you know, the OTC sales method through that's available today. So they want more liquidity. It's trading at a discount. It has been trading at a discount ever since you saw the Bitcoin ETF emerge and start trading here in Canada. We're optimistic there will be a near-term approval for a spot ETF here in the U.S. markets in the near term. But again, from a regulatory standpoint, you know, approving a product that is regulated by the CFTC, trading on the CME, you know, you're sort of passing the buck as the SEC to another body from a regulatory standpoint, not really owning the approval themselves. So I think it's an easy first step to be to be determined or to be seen whether or not we see something in the near term on the spot side. But, you know, long term, the spot Bitcoin or Ethereum or diversified ETF will be better for price appreciation and sort of the supply, soaking up the supply side that we see that comes day to day.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely agree with you there on that last note, sort of a bullish catalyst for the market. I think we just see that evidenced by the massive inflows into the market over the past month or so. But David, same question to you, I guess. Curious to know your thoughts on, I guess, like the complementary versus competitive nature of all these different structured products coming into the crypto public market, and just how you see all of these different products entering the market and relating to each other.
Yeah, 100%. And I totally agree in that the Bitcoin futures ETF approvals that we have seen and that we'll probably continue to see going forward are they're a step in the right direction. And I think one thing that is interesting is that although this is not the ultimate product that a lot of the industry and probably most of investors would like to have, which would be a Bitcoin spot ETF, I think it's also important to mention that this was the fastest or the most successful ETF launch in history. The ProShares ETF was able to outperform GLD, which was the fastest asset gathering ETF in history. And this is a record that has been around for 17 years. So I think one very interesting takeaway from this is that there is actually interest for having exposure to Bitcoin through a ticker, through a product that has a ticker and that slots in well into many professional investors' work streams. A lot of people, especially the more crypto savvy people, would say, "Hey, why do you need a Bitcoin ETF? Why can't you just go to an exchange or whatever else and just buy it?" But it turns out that for many investors, that's interesting. And I think I can totally understand. I mean, these are a lot of the investors that we talk to. We have been doing surveys with financial advisors for almost 4 years now, asking, measuring their attitudes towards Bitcoin and crypto. And we always ask, what is your preferred way to have exposure to this asset class? And the answer number one, by far, like 70-80%, is always ETF. Is always an ETF. So, for us, this is not that much of a surprise. But I think it's a nice confirmation that there is demand for having exposure to Bitcoin through those types of products. I also agree that there's a number of quirks with having a futures-based ETF product for investors as well. I mean, there are like carrying costs and rolling costs, in that there is a chance that this product will not, that actually there's a high chance that these products will not track the price of spot Bitcoin very well. So imperfect product, but a step in the right direction. And what I would say is that in terms of differentiating, like I'm going to call Bitcoin and the Bitcoin miners, I think one interesting thing, and I think circling back a little bit to what I said in the beginning, this is a very interesting industry in and of itself. So it not only provides this leverage to the spot Bitcoin price, but it has this very unique combination of growth and profitability. And as Wes mentioned, I mean, very different business model. So like, I think the largest listed Bitcoin miner is probably Marathon with over $5 billion of market cap. The smallest is probably Fortress with 50 million. So there's a wide range here of types of companies, and they're very different in terms of size, in terms of verticalization strategy, around whether they hold or sell their Bitcoin, around how they establish your business, how they think about capital structure. So this makes up to me as a very interesting sector and like super that is super compelling for investors to look into and either have beta exposure through an index or look for alpha and try to differentiate these companies.
As to echo your thoughts on the ProShares listing, that was a huge day for volumes. It was second all time for an ETF launch, right?
Yeah, I think it was the second all time first day volume, and it was the first ETF to reach $1 billion. So GLD took 3 days to reach $1 billion. ProShares did it in 2 days.
Yeah, it just kind of speaks to demand for that market, which kind of leads me to a question that we've kind of been passing over the conversation so far. And that's, how should pleb miners be looking at investing in these products? If they're, how should they be valuing, whether it's an ETF, an index, or something in between? What should they be valuing? Is it based on benchmark? Should they be kind of allocating based on different strategies that you guys already have in mind? Be really interested to get your thoughts on how pleb miners should value public mining stocks. David, I'll actually throw it back to you first, but Wes, really interested to get your thoughts.
Yeah, definitely. So for Bitcoin miners specifically, I agree with what Wes has said. I mean, these are companies that are a lot easier to measure or to find a fair value estimate versus something like Bitcoin, which is a commodity. So a lot of the methodologies that we already have for companies, commodities companies, I think they apply here. You can do multiples, you can do full DCF analyses, and you can go into different levels of detail as much as you want to go and as further down as you want to go. What I would say is that one thing I find interesting is that for a lot of these miners, there's quite a lot of information. So you can go relatively granular in your analysis here. So you can do a simple analysis like EV to megawatt or EV to hash rate, which is a very simple way to look at how these companies compare. But for investors who want to go deeper, there definitely the information is out there for them to understand how these companies are different, how their returns on capital are different, and then start to look into more detailed and granular multiples. I'm a big fan of cash flow multiples, so I think you should go all the way down to try to understand where the fair value is coming from. That's kind of what I used to do as well before moving to the crypto world. But that's what I would say. I mean, a lot of the frameworks that are used for regular stocks, they basically apply here. The only difference is that it's a more cyclical market. The underlying commodity, Bitcoin, is more volatile than most of the other commodities around. But other than that, I think it's pretty much the same frameworks.
Awesome. And Wes, I'll give it to you. I don't know if maybe come back to you in a second. Oh, never mind. He'll jump back in a moment. Zach, I'll throw it to you for the next question, though. Maybe when Wes comes back, we can pitch him the same question, though.
Yeah, for sure. I guess I kind of want a little bit of a follow-up on that question, but I wanted to get Wes's opinion. I'm sure he'll be back in a minute. But David, I'm curious if like the weightings of your index like surprise you at all, I guess, because you mentioned, you know, I think you said like over a third or something like that has exposure to mining right now. And I know you adjust them, you said every quarter roughly, or maybe it was every 6 months. But are you surprised at all? Or is it just sort of, you know, kind of an expected function of both the bullishness of crypto generally, and then also, you know, more specific to mining, the huge shift in hash rate from China to the US, and obviously a hugely bullish climate on mining in North America right now. Is it a surprise to you, or what are your thoughts generally on that sort of allocation?
Yeah, no, great question. I mean, these things are always easier to think in hindsight, right? I'm not sure if I would have predicted that the miners would do so well before the China ban or anything like that. But I mean, if considering the path and how the market has evolved, I would say that it hasn't surprised me much. I mean, on one hand, it makes a lot of sense, I think, for a lot of these miners to be listed. It is probably one of the industries in Bitcoin and crypto that does make a lot of sense to have this access to capital. So I'm not surprised that this is the first industry that had a bunch of listed players. It is great that this at least Western miners, they got the gift of a lifetime, right? You guys know this better than I do with the China ban. So it's kind of a perfect storm for them with Bitcoin prices where they are. Competition for mining at relatively low or favorable levels. And that's kind of speaks a lot to how fast this industry is growing again. I mean, if you take like these companies like Marathon and Riot, I mean, if you look like first half of last year, these companies were making like $2-3 million of revenue. Now they're making like 30-35 million. And then if you look going forward, we're talking about companies that have 2 or 3 exahashes per second that they're moving to something like 10 to 15. And these are the large caps. I mean, the smaller companies are growing even faster. So I think if you told me that right after the Chinese mining ban, it's a great moment for Western or especially American miners, I think I would say yes. I think that's a pretty straightforward conclusion. But the extent to which these companies benefited, I think to me was a surprise, and how fast the hash rate moved back and how these companies continue to ramp up their capacity. I think that was a pretty positive surprise and drew, I think, a lot of the strong price performance that we're seeing right now.
Wes, I want to pitch you the question I asked David a second ago. When you're looking at public mining stocks or just even Bitcoin adjacent stocks in general for miners, how do you choose to kind of weigh your positions, or how would you advise someone to weigh their positions and like valuing these stocks?
Yeah, I mean, look, I would largely say the rubber hasn't hit the road yet with a lot of these equities. You know, a lot of the growth's on the come, and those sort of fundamental, like Buffett style, the CFA driven, like cash flow analysis, multiples analysis, it's tough, right? It's the wild, wild west. You've got a sector that you've got a bunch of untested management teams, and you're really out there trying to, you know, generate a certain amount of faith in their ability to deliver. And these hard borders are real. And when they do land in North America, wherever they're built or building, they have the ability to rack them and have decent uptimes and have like good infrastructure to support the long-term sort of cash flow generation capabilities of this hardware. That being said, like there are good teams that have real infrastructure and good sort of service providers, contractors out there scaling equipment or operations that have been at this for a number of years and do have the ability to scale in a significant way and drive significant cash flows. I think we all know, again, back to some of the earlier comments I made, that like 40 cents rev per terahash long-term in an industrial scale business, like people are capitalists at the end of the day, assuming that this semiconductor chip glut sorts itself out with new foundries stood up over the next 2 or 3 years, and obviously billions and billions of dollars required to support that. But, mining hardware production will ramp and hash rates will increase, and they will respond to market conditions. And long term, you know, people will need to be able to drive up, businesses will need to be able to drive like reasonable paybacks and returns on investment. Like, and historically, I think anybody that's scaled operations in recent years has always been looking to do like a 1 year payback on their equipment investment. That's sort of what's let the benchmark threshold amongst operators. Moving back to early this year, prior to this minor Chinese ban and, you know, historical network highs in terms of hash rate and BTC trading at, you know, a third of where it is today or 40% of where it is today, buying hardware at $90 a terahash was, in my view, a little bit of a losing proposition. It would have been really hard as a fiduciary of shareholder OPM, like other people's money, to go buy hardware when at the current point in time, you're faced with like three year paybacks. That being said, it's worked out incredibly well for those that did buy hardware. Probably couldn't have predicted the sort of environment they'd be operating in or the returns they've been generating since then. So it's like, it's been an incredible investment. If you get the window right, this is a brilliant business. And I think long-term, as the sector matures, as there's more manufacturer options for hardware, and there's just more visibility in terms of like sectoral coverage amongst the buy side, research reports, predictability and cash flows and earnings on a quarter over quarter basis. Like you start to bring some real world or like old world, like generalist, large cap, blue chip money into this sector, which just continues to foster it, continues to support new entrants, continues to help with the evolution of new products available within this space. And the one thing that was interesting that I didn't mention on just capitalizing or cannibalizing demand with ProShares last week versus some of the other mining or crypto proxies is the fact that they did start trading last week at an all-time high is pretty much as good as it gets, like for the launch of a new product like this. And to see, $1 billion in AUM in 2 days, the trading volumes they got is like, it's incredible. It could, like, as an asset manager listing a new product, it really does not get any better than that. Like good for them. Timing couldn't have been better. Same with us, like listing a product at a thematic product in the crypto mining markets in July when we were trading at $31,000 BTC, and where we're at today could have been better as well, but you don't always get the timing right. But the trend that I saw last week was very different than CoinShares listing debut in March, where I think you did see a fairly obvious cycle of capital out of some of the miners and other proxies into CoinShares shortly. Like on its first day of trading and shortly thereafter, we didn't really necessarily see the same. Everything was on the same trend, right? A rising tide lifts all ships. Like everybody was trading really, really well last week as the excitement surrounding like investments with exposure to this asset class was also at an all-time high alongside BTC. So, excited to see where things go, but challenges all over the place managing products within the sector. And sorry
it's,
for the
crazy.
I was gonna say sorry, my difficulties, my headset died, but I'm back.
no problem at all. I was just gonna say it's crazy to think about what you said, that like the growth for most of these mining companies, especially the market leaders, is still to come. And sort of the China crackdown and hash rate drop coupled with the surge in hash rate we've seen coming from American companies, like in large part has kind of been coincidental, because a lot of this new hash rate is from projects obviously that were planned 2-3 years ago and are now just coming online. And we have this huge surge in investor and build out interest in North America as hash rate migrates from China, with a whole new sort of tranche of projects that are still to come. The growth is just going to be insane. But something David was talking about for a minute there was whether or not he's surprised by some of the growth and performance in some of these stocks. And as sort of Riggs is like a more pure like mining investment vehicle, I want to toss the same question to you. Like, are you surprised, I guess, by some of the growth multiples you've seen by particular companies and more specific to your ETF? Are you at all surprised by any of the allocations you have now in terms of weighting based on your standards and methodologies and stuff? Or is all of it sort of standard and I guess kind of in line with what you expected in a bullish crypto and then by default bullish mining market also? Has anything surprised you?
Look, I mean, as a CFA by training and somebody that's built out over 1,000 DCF models for sure for banking clients in the 12 years as a former investment banker, like I like math, I like modeling, I like forecasting and stress testing, like models to sort of underpin a methodology on a public valuation. But even, I will admit, managing an active product in this sector before we put a trade on, I do find myself trolling Reddit forums and like some of the boiler rooms, because like, frankly, like the biggest guys with the premium multiples without question have the biggest Reddit or stock twits following. And it's just like more eyes on the story and tend to trend well when markets are headed in one direction or another. But the mining sector in itself, like, is, we've gotten into this about benchmarking a little bit historically, Zach, but like the thing about Riggs is, if we had a diversified, like a big enough sector to go 100% pure play renewable based mining operations, that would have been our intention with the product day one. But the fact is there weren't enough names to meet all of the sort of regulatory diversification thresholds that we have to meet in an active product. So we hold the semiconductor companies, and we also have a cash position. And back to the China crackdown, like, you can't necessarily benchmark a miner's performance against like just the price evolution in one of the digital assets, because again, with that, you know, all things equal, a year from now, the miners will likely be worse performers than BTC, just given the fact that hash rate's going to increase and the profitability of your hardware is going to decrease if BTC price was static. That being said, we also have, you know, the semiconductor allocation, which, I mean, frankly, the names that we own, like NVIDIA, AMD, et cetera, have done very well and been very stable in the portfolio and helped us outperform BTC in times of like a market sell-off, which also sort of has its benefits to investors. But investing in the mining business in general, like a digital asset inventory, the ability to produce like very, very high margins, especially in the current environment, that like 90% gross mining margin running 30 joule equipment at 4 cents power. It's, you know, you've got an industrial scale, real business that underpins these ops. And theoretically, as this evolves, should provide more downside protection, just putting a multiple on that cash flow than you know, in a market where BTC is selling off or Ethereum selling off. So you know, in terms of portfolio allocation for the generalist retail investor, like product like RIGS or owning the mining equities directly, I think is having an allocation there makes sense long term, especially if you believe in the stagflation or hyperinflationary horizon ahead of us.
Yeah, for sure. I appreciate the answer. Sorry. I just kind of want to wrap up with one question here. There's obviously a lot going on in crypto generally, and a lot happening in the mining sector. And as we just touched on a minute ago, a lot more to come. What we're sort of at the top, almost at the top of the hour, what are one or maybe two key things you guys are looking towards between, say, like now and the next halving, or maybe in a shorter time frame, like now and maybe the end of this current like bullish market cycle, if we hit a little bit of a sell off in the next year or so, in terms of like growth predictions or maybe a huge batch of new public listings or I don't know, anything, just sort of forward looking, some expectations there. Wes, I'll hand it back to you if you don't mind, and then David, I want to hear your expectations, I guess, also.
I think there's definitely enough hype and eyes on the market that there's going to be, without question, you know, between now and May or March or April of 2024, we're going to see, I don't know what my guess would be, at least probably 20 other publicly listed miners. And especially if we're in the same sort of BTC environment or stronger, you know, people are capitalists and entrepreneurs will respond to momentum-based market opportunities, and small projects will see the valuations that some of these public equities are trading at and chase big dollars in terms of liquidity events, et cetera. And you mentioned Fortress, David. Fortress was a banking client of mine. I raised them their first $15 million and found them their shell back in 2000. I think this started in November 2017. So also very familiar with that name. It's sort of been trading pretty sideways with a 2.5 megawatt facility in Washington for years, and just this year, you know, signed the agreement with Marty over at GAM, and sort of off the races with profit sharing container based build out. And but look, like there's names that are now trading the public markets that I'm shocked to see trading in the public markets, like groups that had been talking to us at Bitfarms about just putting them out of their misery and acquiring their facilities and taking the equipment off their hands, and that are now sitting on, you know, millions of dollars worth of stock as the founders of the company that had, you know, good positions as founders. But heading in the next halving, like, look, the first few months of the halving in May and June, July, August of 2020 were terrible. Like, let's not sugarcoat anything, like sitting at 8 cent revenue per terahash. I made some predictions on a few webcasts back then that we'd see like a 50 or 60% pullback in hash rate. And I'm actually, embarrassed, but also shocked to that it didn't necessarily play out that way, which just suggests that, you know, don't be surprised when there are, you know, groups running S9s profitably off stolen power in some like third world jurisdiction. And that's a significant component of the networks. And ultimately, as a miner scaling a business, it's up to you to find low cost power and always be upgrading your hardware and running the best equipment possible so that you can have the lowest cost per terahash in terms of production, like joules times price per 20, times 24 hours a day times your price per kilowatt hour. So the cost of running a terahash has to be lower than the vast majority of your peers, and you'll have a business that continues to generate positive margins when others aren't.
Also a lot to unpack there, Wes. I really enjoyed having you on the show. David, just to wrap up, last question, but same question to you. Just anything like notable or you're expecting from, I guess, crypto mining more specifically than crypto generally, between now and the next, you know, couple of years, maybe even up to the halving?
Yeah, definitely. I would probably say two things. Well, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing more companies coming to the market. I think we're going to keep seeing that. Crypto actives in general, probably crypto, Bitcoin mining as well. But I would probably say two things. Number one, I'm interested to see if at some point we're going to see more M&A activity. So like the bigger companies buying the smaller ones, the ones that make sense. I think if scale is something that makes sense in this industry, I wonder if at some point we're going to start to see more M&A activity. And the second thing is I'm interested in seeing what other types of jurisdictions we're going to start seeing as interesting mining hubs. I'm born and raised in South America. Well, I know Bitfarms is making bets in Argentina and Paraguay. I think that this could be an interesting hub for Bitcoin mining going forward. And it will develop and become more prominently than it is. But at any rate, I would be interested in seeing what other locations we're going to start to seeing as effective and important centers for Bitcoin mining.
That's awesome. Yeah, we had a great stream a few weeks back with some South American miners who are pretty bullish on the industry down there.
Yeah.
But I want to welcome and I want to thank you guys both for jumping on the stream. Both of these guys can be found on Twitter along with Riggs and Bitwise. So be sure to give both of them a follow. Thank you again so much for joining on the stream and talking about public mining stocks with us and public mining firms in general. If you like the show and you like the stream, be sure to subscribe to us on YouTube. We're almost at 3,000 subs, which is pretty awesome after only about 2 or 3 months of doing these shows. You can also find this in podcast form on any platform you like. But otherwise, that's a wrap for us today. And I want to thank Zach, Wes, and Dave for jumping on.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Appreciate it.
This was a ton of fun.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks.